when there is a social or environmental demand in the context of a campaign. So for instance, Greta Thunberg is at the UN and she's putting demands on the table, right? Or when a social movement of any kind is bringing up demands for a change to happen structurally or culturally, those demands are intrinsically connected, linked to demands to disidentify. When we ask an institution or people working in an institution or anyone to change, we touch something that relates to identity. And we know how tricky that is, because then when we start to open the box of identity, now you start to recognize that identity is a slippery slope, right? The stronger the demand, the resistance to that demand is going to be a hang-on process. Like, so here, the person or institution or group you're asking to change is going to hang on to its identity, to this part of the identity that relates to the demand. It's imaginary because it's a story that I tell myself to be able to relate to the world. I kind of pick features for my life in a way, and sometimes consciously, sometimes not. It's like with fashion, for instance, I can say that, oh, this is the way I dress. This is the kind of clothing that I like. I like wearing a cap and that kind of glasses, and this is my identity. I decide it, but it's an imaginary, it's a story. Second, identity relates to the id. The id in psychoanalytic theory, if you know a little bit of Freud, and you know, it's the part of our psyche that's responsible for our most primitive impulses and drives. It's that it's the impulsive side of human behavior. So you can think of the toilet paper rush when they announce a new confinement. Well, it's driven by the id. It's that instinct that is probably not a very good idea to rely on or to free will with if we want to be resilient. You can think of idol or idiot has the same prefix here. We can see this very clearly, that identity is something that belongs to the id, to this impulsive side of human behavior. By submitting to the id, so if identity is what really rules your life and it's everything that I care about is my identity, and I go and densify that feature, well, I'm submitting to the id. It's not necessarily a good thing, but why do we think that people with a very strong identity are very desirable? And that's the third point here. It's triggered by a cultural dimension that successful people they have a very strong identity. That's what we deduct from the cultural environment. Oh, this guy is so real. Oh, she's so real. He's so real. Like, it feels like it is desirable to have a very strong identity, or it's morally right. And this is triggered by culture. But there's also a lot of confusion with authenticity, for instance, or with charisma. But I will write here that there is a cultural dimension to this thirst for identity, for more identity. And it became a desirable thing with the rise of nationalism, for instance, you can think about that. And then four, there's confusion because we tend to think that it's authenticity. Identity has nothing to do with authenticity. It's not because you don't develop a very strong identity that you don't value cultural heritage, for instance. Basically, those are four pillars that I think are important to remember when we talk about identity. You can decide to disidentify from something and reconstruct identity around something else. So here I write decision. You can make the decision to disidentify from something, from a specific feature in you that you want to phase out. For instance, if I'm impossible to live with, then because I get impatient and it's not at all my case, Maybe this feature of impatience is something that I want to phase out. And so if I identify with this because my dad was impatient, I can, from the impulse of decision, I can decide to disidentify from impatience and to work on this. And you are doing this every day.